Welcome and thanks for listening. My name is Christian Buckley, and you're listening to the Collab Talk podcast. In this episode, I'm talking with Martin Pietschuk, CEO of Pinch Marketing, on the real-world impact of AI on small to medium businesses. Let's get started. And welcome to another episode of the Collab Talk podcast, where we discuss the convergence of technology, business productivity, and collaboration culture. And my guest today is Martin Pietschuk, CEO of Pinch Marketing. Welcome, Martin.
Thanks, Christian. Happy to be here.
Well, this is an interesting conversation. It's from one marketer to another. We're talking about, you know, both of us work in the tech space and throughout our careers. And with all that's going on around AI, we're talking today about AI's real-world impact on SMBs, small to medium-sized businesses. Because it's my perception, while there are players that are out there, Microsoft, for example, is very much focused on the enterprise space, as they always have been. There's the consumer products, but their bread and butter is the enterprise space. You know, technology that's used for business. And they've got their Copilot solutions that are out there. Then on the other side, and I was sharing with you earlier this week, like you go to Instagram and there's all these videos of, hey, you're a creator or you're a small business, you're an entrepreneur. Here are five AI tools that you need to know and kind of walk you through some different scenarios. So My perception is that you see solutions that are really geared towards individuals, creators, entepreneurs, and large enterprises, and what's actually happening in the SMB space. So I'd love to get your perceptions, your experience on that. But first, it's always great. Why don't you fully introduce yourself and your company and what you do?
Thanks, Christian. So thank you for the intro, by the way. Very flattering. So I've been in the marketing space for all my career, but we spoke before we started this conversation. I've been in B2B marketing for most of my career, almost 20 years. Technology, both an entrepreneurial part of it, meaning I ran my own startup, to owning an agency that's working with enterprises, SMBs in the tech environment, in the channel. So I'm quite familiar with that space from that end. And basically my agency, it's called Pinch for a reason. We were in a pinch ourselves, and a lot of our clients were in a pinch just to get a lot of the campaigns done that they had to do in order to drive demand. You know, we were born in COVID. Time was actually not too bad for us, so considering everything the bad that was happening around it, because everything went digital. Marketing went from all 50% of marketing budgets were being spent on events. Now that was completely done, as you know, no events were to be had. So all that money went towards digital, including events, so virtual events and, you know, the Zoom, the platform we're using today. So that's where we were born, out of the need to help these organizations trying to figure out how do we, you know, drive demand, lead generation, opportunities, awareness, without being able to speak to people face to face. So Pinch was born. So here we are.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been, again, in the tech space my entire career, and but as a marketing guy, and it's funny, like 20 plus years ago, I had a little consulting company with a couple friends and business partners, and we worked with bringing international firms that wanted to expand their channel into the U.S. That was kind of our specialty. Funny enough, it's kind of my focus now, is that, you know, that side of business things. But I've always been an advocate for content marketing, and how important content marketing is to digital advertising. And I would often remark that people don't fully understand how much content, you know, how much effort it is in what could be seemingly a simple digital campaign, how many different pieces there are. Because that's one area where I think a lot of people just thought, hey, I can go and use these AI tools and just simply just whip this stuff out. I'd love your perspective on that. My answer for people is that it's not quite that easy, at least not yet.
No. No, I agree with you. I mean, I've dabbled it, and every single time I posted something on LinkedIn that was using AI, everybody called me out on it. They're like, privately, it wasn't in public. I wasn't shamed or anything, but people were like, this doesn't sound like you, Martin. And they were right. So I think the tools are not there yet. I think there's opportunity to teach the AI our tone and our way of conversing with the world, and applying that. But it's still in nominal stages. But going back to like content creation, I think there's just going back a step. I think that there's the challenge of building content in the first place. I think talking to SMBs especially, the challenge are usually marketing, if it's been done at all, it's all done by the founders, by the CEO, and they all dabble a little bit with marketing, and that's the bit of a downfall for them, because they see themselves as marketers because it seems so intuitive a lot of times, right? But then there's a period where they get to the certain point where they hit a wall and they don't know why exactly. And that's where usually we come in, because we bring the rigor and we bring the tough questions to the table. So what I mean by tough questions? The tough questions are when you talk to a CEO early on, they just usually say, hey, if the world just knew about our solution, it would just fly off the shelf, right? By itself. Just all they need to know is to know the word. So just get it out to as many people as possible. This spray and pray approach and hope for the best. And of course, that's, listen, this is my opinion. It's very wrong. Like, you're not selling Pepsi. You're not selling Coke. You are selling, most cases, B2B solutions that are very specific, and they're designed for very specific audiences. So niche products, right? Like you said, your niche in marketing is working with B2B organizations that are trying to, with that international slant, bringing maybe business to North America. You bring in that North American experience to the table. That's your niche. And then off, your Microsoft experience, right? That's another, like, you making even tighter. So I think the key in creating great content is to try to find out the unique voice. What is this organization really, what is their story? And who are they telling that story to? So I usually ask the right questions in the beginning, or the tough questions, saying, hey, who or is your ideal client? Like, not who can buy your product, because everybody could potentially to whip out the credit card. No, I'm saying, who is your ideal client? So going from this, going to this, and then trying to really understand that audience, and then catering that content towards that audience very specifically. And I think that's the first step. And then in AI, I think AI is only going to spit out what you ask of it. Mm-hmm. So the art of AI is, or at least what I'm learning as I use it, is, and my clients use it, is prompting it the right way, asking the right questions, having the right idea of what you're trying to convey to the world. So I think the strategy of it all and the purpose and the intent of what this content is supposed to do for them is really still the human is still the owner of that, right? So that is, I think, but taking it to that level, I think the ideation of content strategy, content plan still lies within us, I think.
I realize that the technology is, of course, getting smarter. It's getting better. And I think the closer we get to that, the natural language, and again, the tools that we use, the better that we can train them against our voice, our tone, mm-hmm. our goals. I think it's going to change. Like, this conversation a year from now could be very different based on how rapidly the technology is growing, expanding, and learning. But right now,
maybe it won't be me sitting here. Maybe it will be my avatar.
That's right. Well, hey, you brought that up. So I do have a friend who is a professional trainer who about a year ago went and paid a bunch of money, thousands of dollars, for an AI to actually model their head, their face, and also their voice. And now almost all of the online training that they're providing, the videos they're creating, it's not actually their head sitting there talking in the bottom right corner. Ooh. It's the AI. Because it's smaller, you can't see the little fluctuations there, but everything text-based. It's still this person. I'm being very careful I'm not saying who it is that out there, because a really popular trainer out there, but it's all AI and text-based. And so they're able to go and more rapidly build content and around that. But anyway, I still say so much of that's in the future.
Yeah.
But you still can't just go and out of whole cloth create good marketing copy. It just doesn't happen. So much, to your point, so much right now is about, you know, like the art of prompt engineering. How am I training it with enough? What am I asking? Am I structuring my request in the right way to get the right information out there? It's why I actually think Microsoft's branding of their product, their AI product as Copilot, is a brilliant name. It's not taking over as the pilot. It's the Copilot. It's there to assist. Right. It's not the lead. And
yeah, it's funny that you say that, because I'm actually, I liked an analogy. I'm a pilot myself. I had earned my private pilot license a few years ago, and I totally get the analogy, right? But interesting enough, the pilot in command, or sort of, you know, that's the pick, so to call, and the co-pilot or the first officer does a lot of flying. Ultimately, the decision of what's going to happen, where to fly, is ultimately to the captain of the plane. So I totally get the analogy; makes a lot of sense. And I think we can't forget that. I think, you know, the idea is that it's alluring to go and have AI do everything for us. And I think, you know, we've seen the repercussions of that. You know, we see hallucinations. We saw law firms or lawyers using AI to create false cases to win, and then obviously falling off flat on their face when that happened. So there's definitely huge risks out there to just rely heavily on this Copilot to do your job for you. So even with Microsoft, and we worked on a few Copilot campaigns with some of our partners, and I could tell you that it's really important to make that distinction, that it's there to help you do your job. It's not there to do the job for you. Right. So I think that's a very important point. That being said, you know, Copilot, what I think I really like about Copilot, but it's also a bit of a risk, so is this idea that you are encouraged to feed your own internal data into the index of the Copilot so that it learns how you live, how your organization lives and breathes, you know, like from all the individuals, how you talk to the world, how you talk to yourself, and then eventually it learns and becomes, you know, as it learns, it becomes much more effective at being able to speak for you in a way that it's going to be using your voice, your brand, and that's really important these days.
Yeah, and I think that is, again, I think Microsoft is, you know, why they're in a leadership position around these tools in this space, is because they're essentially making it very easy for those that are in the Microsoft ecosystem. If you're using PowerPoint and Word and Excel and kind of all those tools, or Microsoft Teams for your team collaboration, SharePoint for your intranet, all those kinds of things, using Copilot, the Enterprise Edition leverages all of that. And so provides tremendous value because it's secure around your organization and your data. I mean, the alternative to that is, and you've been able to do for a while, is go build like a small business that maybe is not a Microsoft shop. They're using Slack for their collaboration. They're using Google Docs and kind of all those different things. You can still go and build your own large language model, you know, your own LLM that's trained on your data. And so that it is, you know, it's informed on your tone, your messaging, your past campaigns and work, and the suggestions it brings is based on that historical data. That's really the key. It's so, you know, that's, and maybe it's a word of warning too, of using the internet-based LLMs, you know, AI tools that are out there. It's pulling from data that is, at best, I think, even OpenAI, it still has about a 6-month threshold. It's not real-time data, so it's learning based on data that is a year to 6 months old at best. But that it's pulling, and then everything that it generates, it's learning from and putting back into its repositories, so it's not private.
That's right. It's you always have to read your terms and conditions, and of course, none of us do. Absolutely, I think it's really important to whatever tool you're using out there, and I don't definitely encourage you to tread carefully in terms of what data you want to make available. So I wouldn't put any proprietary data that you would consider to be sellable or your IP that you don't want the world to know about, for sure. Ultimately, it's yours to have. I think, you know, in the future of AI, I think your proprietary data is going to be it. That's what you will own. I think websites, as we know them, will probably not exist. It's about what's being fed into that ecosystem, you know, that AI database that's going to be, you know, I'm not sure how many, you know, I can't even say that the number of bytes that it requires to hold all this data together. Yeah. But I'm not surprised that there's a lag, right, of 6 months even. Like, you know, imagine the vast sea of data that's being indexed as we go. It's incredible. Like, the, you know, one interesting article I read recently is about how much energy will be required just to house a lot of these prompts. Like, it's insane amount of electricity, insane amount of energy to keep that infrastructure together. So it'll be interesting how that all plays out when the adoption is increased so considerably. But going back to your point about Microsoft, why the Copilot launch has been so brilliant, I think, and is that because they've integrated it with, it's an extension of the tools that they already make available to people. Right. So even within Teams, which is a communication tool, it's so easy for them to sort of plug it in and saying, hey, summarize these meetings, put quotes, give me the report. All these things make so much sense. I still can't afford Copilot because, you know, we're still piloting a lot of other tools.
Right.
But I'm sure it will become much more feasible for even a small business like my own, right? So, like you said, well, I'm more in the boat of like experimenting with various tools. I've mm-hmm. experimented with the Googles, with AI, I've experimented with AWS's, Microsoft's, and obviously ChatGPT, and others. They're much more specialized around different use cases like audio, video, and others.
Well, I think that is the key here, is to go and pilot, to experiment. As you said, you need to read the terms and conditions. You need to understand, how is my data being used? Am I feeding into it? Because that was it's repeatedly, I've heard that, again, we're not talking specifically about Copilot today, mm-hmm. Microsoft ecosystem, but that's a lot of voice concerns from companies about, like, how is my data being used? It was why it was in the FAQs when Copilot launch materials came out. But that is something that I think companies need to be, certainly you see it, the rise of like CISOs, chief information security officers in large mm-hmm. enterprises. And I think the not to go dark here, but the cost, the impact, the financial impact to small to medium-sized businesses is like 10x what it is to any enterprise. If you have a breach, if you have something, so
that's right.
We need to be, as SMBs need to be, much more conscious of the security implications of the tools that we're piloting and trialing. Like, people, we you need to understand, the ramifications of trialing, and be careful with how you're trialing solutions.
Especially if you're in a data business and your information is your business, then it's super important. I completely agree with you. So if you're going to bring any technologies, like, then tread carefully. Maybe consult with your cybersecurity buddy and seeing, you know, what do they have to say. But I agree. I think I wouldn't want to be a security expert working for a large organization today, thinking about how unknown complexities that this brings to the table that they have to take into consideration, trying to now roll this out for thousands of employees potentially all at the same time. So I know everybody that I talk to, and even companies like the MSPs or the resellers that are in the business of co-sell motions with Microsoft, they always talk about tread carefully, experiment, pilot, do it small, little, you know, find your champions and learn from that and grow. The truth of the matter is, a lot of organizations still don't know how AI was going to benefit them. I think there's still a lot of, not fear necessarily, but angst around what is it going to create value, but at the same create a lot of risk. So you have to find that middle ground where the value outweighs the risks.
So where do you see right now today, where we are with the tools that are out there, and from a marketing perspective, like, where are you seeing the most value out of the new slate of AI tools?
I'll tell you some stories of what I found. As I mentioned, we've experimented with using AI just to write articles, ebooks, other long forms of content. And we found that we had to step back a little bit. For various reasons. A, the language was still maybe too verbose. The language was not necessarily in the right tone. So we went back to the original writer, was the human copywriter. And then what we did, though, differently, which was, I think, a really interesting use case, is we uploaded the brand guidelines and the tone to the AI tool and saying, hey, here's a piece of content we just wrote. Check it against these brand guidelines. See if we are on point. And if we're not, highlight sections that you believe are, you know, again, going against the brand guidelines. Mm-hmm. And it works. It's not 100%, full disclosure, but it does highlight some of the major, major issues that, you know, a lot of clients of ours, they have brand guidelines that are like 30, 40 pages long. Right. So, man, even training every single copywriter for them to remember the thing verbatim is almost impossible. So this will take a huge amount of effort away from them and allow us to shrink the periods of going back and forth with the client, ensuring the quality is there, that the tone and the brand is represented well in the marketplace. And then we can focus a little bit more on using AI to maybe expand on some sections, maybe clear up some things, maybe clean up some things. Mm-hmm. But the strategy and the outline is still controlled by the writer and the stakeholders we're working with very closely to put that in together.
It's almost like it's an improvement on what I've been using for years and years is like Grammarly. And Grammarly mm-hmm. had, of course, and I've got it. So I'm paid Grammarly user. So it's integrated into browser extensions. I can see when I'm writing a blog post and things pop up and suggestions, all that kind of stuff, which is great. But also things like plagiarism checker and, I mean, I can see how this, all of these tools are revolutionizing in education sector, for example, companies that are providing services to teachers. And I will say that it's getting the technology to track, to identify and, cheating, plagiarism for education has greatly improved with these AI tools to be able to go and look for that. I mean, soon, not to make any
predictions,
kids out there to sweat a little, but that it can even over the course of a semester track the patterns, the language usage, and be able to check to see like this doesn't sound like your voice, and then look for the plagiarism checker. Of course, on the side of the kids is that there's also tools as you're going and using AI, you can self check against plagiarism.
So, just to make sure your copy is original,
right? But that goes one of the things that I use the most, because I said out of creating content, as you've experienced in your tests as well, creating just content out there, especially longer form, it's not good at that. What it's really good at is I'll write down ideas or notes from something and I'll feed it in and say, based on this, what are the patterns, what are the main themes that you see within this from my own copy that could be then a blog post outline to highlight those things? Mm-hmm. I mean, this That's is right. one of the selling factors of for Copilot, going back to my enterprise, like being able to read through my email to summarize. Somebody sends me a 30-page PDF and I'm going into a meeting in 30 minutes, like summarize this. What are the three main takeaways that I need to know about this long piece? What are the trends that I see? Like, it's fantastic at that. I could go in as I did for these interviews and I say, here, the profile, here's the topic, here's some sample questions. What are some other questions that I might ask somebody that I'm interviewing for this? And I'll say half of them are no good. You throw it out there, but that's part of the effort is that don't take it word for word, look at its suggestions, tweak it, modify it, pull out those things that are good, that are useful, throw away the rest of it. As an idea generator, it
Absolutely.
Is fantastic.
Absolutely. Yeah, it, you're right. Like you might give and kill 9 out of 10 ideas, but that one is going to really stick. But going back to a couple on the content generation for SMBs, especially the message I want to send out that, as marketers, what we've always been, or at least in where we come from, is this idea that you create this one big piece of content, long form. Maybe it's an ebook, white paper, something that's meaty, valuable, has a lot of insight and information in there. But obviously, you know, the consumption of how people consume content have changed too, right? So you can't just hand them over in big ebook and say, go read this, right? So you have to create what we call waterfall content. So content that's broken, taking the spoon feeding. So yeah. Taking a small, you know, that piece of content and saying, okay, well, we're going to break it into 5 different articles. Mm-hmm. We're going to create 20 different social posts. We're going to create maybe a short little video, or maybe 2 videos. Maybe we're going to create script for a webinar that we're going to produce later. Mm-hmm. So this one content actually is the source of truth for multiple pieces of content. So now it's not just one little piece of content. Now it becomes a campaign. Now you have all these different assets that you can disseminate to your audiences through different channels. But more importantly, this is where AI shines, in my opinion. Creating an ad or script for a video based on existing piece of content that's already mimicking the tone and the brand, it's much easier. Like I found that the success rate of creating ads, for instance, copy for LinkedIn posts or copy for any social media posts, or even a script for a video, it does a relatively good job. So I think that one big piece of content, this is where you invest most of your time into, but then you can leverage AI to come up with, create all these other supporting pieces of content. And with people consuming content very differently these days than they used to be, you know, very few people are going to get to the large, meaty piece of content, only the super interested ones that are, you know, trickling through and being nurtured to that bigger piece will get the most value of it. But the remainder will, you know, will consume snippets of all these other things that you've created. So maybe a few different social posts, maybe an audiogram that you've created, maybe an article that you've written, maybe a podcast recording that you've had. So there's a lot of different things you can along the way to create value without them having to dedicate too much time to consuming that large piece of content. So in that regard, I think that's where the biggest win for SMBs are, because, you know, what SMBs are short of is time and resources. You know, rarely do SMBs have enough horsepower to, they might have a hybrid role, maybe someone who is in sales and slash marketing, right? Like they're not an expert by any means. So they have a lot of different tasks on here now with these tools. You might give so much more horsepower to that one individual, maybe a couple of individuals internally to do that work themselves versus relying on even people like me. So we're hiring more FTEs, right? So and today's day where the market is consolidating, there's fewer people and jobs, this might help them considerably.
You know, going back, a company I worked for about 12, 13 years ago, one of the greatest compliments that we ever got, we had some very large competitors that, you know, 1,000 plus employees, again, small in scale, but we were about 120 people. One of the greatest compliments was somebody that like thought we were much larger. You know, we had 4 people in marketing at the time, and one operations, a director, then 2 people that were actually doing the work of marketing and writing all the content, and that they thought we were much larger because of the volume and the quality that we did. But I think we understood, I certainly understood, and this is what I've brought to clients for my fractional CMO services that I provide as a consultant, is exactly what you said. It's like that key piece of content, usually research-based content. You spend a bunch of money and time to go and do research and pull the data together, look at other analysts, the Gartner and Forrester reports, and pulling in all that. You have a 15-page white paper or a giant ebook or something around that. Companies historically have been really bad then at leveraging. Like they'll tweet out a couple times that they created this white paper, and then it's on their site. And they do some of their salespeople push it out there. They kind of leave it at that. They are not adequately leveraging the content that they meticulously created and built, like that IP that they need to take advantage of. And this was what I've been doing over the last, you know, 15 years, is helping organizations understand, get more out of the pieces that you already have in place. Absolutely. That's a lot of what the AI, I mean, you've just described it. You get the breakdown of that, of going and coming up with ideas to break that into, let's say, spoon feeding, you know, to consumable chunks of information for different personas, to different stages of the buying cycle, kind of all those different things off of that one core piece of content. That's what
absolutely
where it can help.
And you know, and I think the other thing I want to add to that is two things. One is the personalization concept, right? You know, everybody nowadays talks about how important it is to be as relevant as we possibly can in the messaging and that we put in front of our potential customer or our customer. They expect to be talked to, not at. So right. That means we need to be able to convey to them how much we know about them, what we know about them, how we can help them address their challenges. Personalization and AI is able to do that. Now, at scale, you could take a message and tweak it to the individual at the individual level. And the same with the pieces of content and advertisement. So the power is definitely there. And I think the scalability now with AIs is also there. I mean, there's some complexity in making sure that it works just the way you want it, but it's so, so important to tap into that level of personalization. The whole blasting people with one generic email message, just don't even do it. Just don't bother.
Right. It never really worked anyway, but especially these days.
There's some interesting statistics out there that I read, and you probably would appreciate one of them specifically, that 60% of content is never used by the salespeople in the same organization for their own sales efforts. So it's like, why? Why is because a lot of times they say that's not relevant enough for the conversation that they're having with their customer or prospect. Yep. Or B, it's as simple as they're not even knowing it exists. Three, it's not in the format that they like to share with the customer. Like I was talking to a rep guy a couple days ago saying, it's like, he doesn't want to send links. Because if he's talking to, like you said, CISO professional security officers, they're like, nobody wants to click on links anymore, right? Yep. So it has to be a PDF or it has to be other form. So again, there's so many different challenges as it lie with content. You have to give a choice and you have to be able to disseminate the content just equally as much internally as you do externally. So like you said, those salespeople who are the engine of, you know, the pipeline for the business are able to leverage as much as they possibly can to help them succeed, right? And ultimately, yep, that's marketing's job, is to provide that, you know, the artillery to the front, force out there, right? Like we have to be able to help them out by educating the marketplace, putting out in front of those potential individuals content that's going to resonate with them, it's going to speak to them. And the number of pieces of content, you know, that's another thing, right? Like I think a few years ago, it was like, you need to have at least 7 touch points with a client before they feel like, okay, I'm ready to have a conversation. I think that number is like 15 nowadays or something like that.
I think it's 15 to 20 as well. Yeah.
It's insane, right?
We're so inundated with marketing messaging now. I mean, that's that again, the 7 was, I mean, I remember hearing that in business school in the early 90s, you know, so that was before.
Yeah, it was probably triple that now. You know, the problem with we can't even measure that anymore, right? The attribution models have become so complex with AI. Hopefully,
attribution is hard, and that's, let me just say this, because you made that point, is that I think that organizations have this idea that you can track everything and be aware of those numbers, like. Attribution data is so difficult to capture around that. You do your best. I say that the a missing piece to that, to truly understand the effectiveness of the marketing, is making sure that your marketing and sales organizations and are aligned in how they work together and feed each other. Mm-hmm. If they're disjointed, and I would say that this is even more important to an SMB, where truly every dollar counts. I'm not saying that's not true for enterprises, but so much more for the SMB that has to, you know, they don't have the luxury of going and piling a lot of different things. They need to find effective things quickly and move forward. Again, yes, that's true for everybody. But when it's, when I'm using my own salary as a small business owner to go and try things versus pay my mortgage, because I need to grow the business and move it forward, you're not doing that. Is a couple steps removed in the enterprise? Somebody else.
I hear you. You know, on the flip side, though, I found something recently. I was listening to this podcast on the channel, and you know, there is, I don't know if you're probably familiar with the MDF model. Mm-hmm. So obviously, these big OEMs, these big vendors like Microsoft, AWS, and others, they have a pool of MDF that they give out to
Marketing development funds, for those that aren't aware of that.
Yeah, market development funds helps essentially. That's how, you know, Microsofts of the world go to market. They go through the channel and the partner ecosystem. And so what's interesting that they found is that there's some studies that we've done that, you know, there is a tendency for these big players to give out the MDF to the top players, right? The ones who are have the biggest sales teams, have the biggest marketing budgets, have the biggest, you know, people support people, because they feel like that's going to be the biggest potential ROI on that. But what they found is the long tail partners, the SMBs, are the ones who developed almost 3x the ROI than the big organizations. So the question is why? And it goes back to your point, is this idea that they are not only so looking at operational effectiveness and making sure that they don't spend a cent in the wrong place, but at the same time, when they do get a lead, guess what? They will be picking that lead up in a second, and they will action it, and they will put it through the whole life cycle, where it's not going to be cherry picking everything it's done. And they're much more dedicated to seeing it through. So it's interesting to see that, you know, I think SMBs have a huge opportunity, especially now, to prove to those big players, say, hey, talk to me. I can help you, probably give you better ROI than maybe some of the typical, you know, players out there.
Well, I think it's always been true, and it's still true even within the AI era, is that, you know, the smaller companies are usually more nimble. They're able to out innovate the larger, slower moving, you know, bigger players kind of in general. Mm-hmm. But you look at, I mean, how many large enterprises are that it's not like SMBs are like counting sand on the beach. I mean, they're everywhere. So the long tail, there's greater opportunity. The as far as a percentage of overall business done globally, there's more that's being done in the medium to small businesses than mm-hmm. all the enterprises combined. But how do you reach them? How do you do that? How can you be effective there? And so it's why you have these large OEMs like Microsoft. They have divisions that look at enterprise. They've got divisions that larger divisions look at SMB.
But the other thing, another plus for SMBs, I think a lot of people are not like the collaboration between sales and marketing. In my experience, whenever I worked with large organizations in the marketing department, I didn't even know who the salespeople were. There are different floors, different departments. The design of the sales team was so complex, I didn't even know where to go to for the purpose that I needed to be. However, in a small, I worked in a couple of startups environments with like about 100 people, or maybe 200 people, where the sales team was maybe 10 individuals and marketing was maybe five or so. And we would have daily stand-ups with the BDR folks, with the market, with the AEs, talking about, hey, what did you think about the quality of the leads this week? We had this campaign. What did you think? Did you hear anything interesting feedback from the marketplace? No? Okay, what do you need? So the dialogue is there at that sort of really daily granular level, which is just not available in a large organization. And I think the small, medium, and sized enterprise now can even leverage AI and data and these hopefully better visibility through different AI tools and data tools is to sort of see exactly what works. How does this lead go from here to becoming a sale and then going backwards, right? And so you can identify, hey, what made this successful was X, Y, and Z different touch points, at which point was the best handoff to the sales organization here, okay? And then you're feeding the sales organization also sales enablement content, anything that they would need to make their sales cycle even easier as well. So I think the future is there to be had by the sale, by the small, medium enterprise. I think, you know, like you mentioned, they're nimble, they're hungry, and I think that's probably the future of the business. And I think AI can really help them, you know, expedite and the growth.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too. And we were talking earlier this week about it. It's so much more. Instead of having to go and hire those people, it's more about the execution. It's being able to do more with less. That's what a lot of these tools are, you know, leverage. But you have to. It goes back to where we started. It goes back to like the art of prompt engineering. You have to understand where the tools fit, how to leverage them. It doesn't just replace the need for a human to be in there doing a lot of the pieces. It just allows them to scale and do much more and become more, initiate and edit and let a lot of the heavy lifting be done by the tools.
You know, what I think AI is really fantastic at is this idea that, you know, the perfection is the enemy of good. Here, it's like you can iterate as many times as you like, and you don't have to. The risk of failure is not costly, right? You can try and try again, and it will fail. It will give you crap results, and then eventually be like, oh, here it is. And then you use that to figure out what is that prompt that really worked for you and your organization. I mean, I want to stress that. It's like not every prompt is going to work for everybody. So, I know exactly what you're talking about, like, you know, watching TikToks or something, and people are talking about, oh, yeah, here's all the prompts you need. No, I don't believe that for a second. No. But what I do believe that is that that might be a good starting point. Use that as a start, and then iterate, learn what works, what doesn't work for you, and then do it again and again and again. Right. And these tools you don't pay per use just yet. So you will be able to experiment. And I think experimentation is super critical. And going back to like the small teams, I think the biggest challenge that SMBs have is that they don't even know where to start. Yeah. Or they may have a hybrid person, as I mentioned before. They may have no one. They might even have just a CEO who in his spare time or her spare time do marketing. And that's obviously one other mortal mistake that I find is that they do something really quick. They spend a minute on it, and then they go, where are the results? Well, guess what? Marketing is it's a marathon. You have to do small things incrementally, change, adapt, experiment, and do it on a continual basis. So what I recommend for smaller players in the beginning is, and this is going to sound self-serving, but hire someone like us, like a small agency, to help you to help you set up the marketing infrastructure, as I call it. Mm-hmm. The tools to measure, the tools to that you need to sort of observe what's happening, and then set up the you know, everything that it will help you execute, and then put the processes in place and put the ideas in place, and then run a few different campaigns and have someone internally who's going to essentially take that over. Yeah. You do a couple campaigns, maybe a couple quarters. You know what I'm talking about. You know, fractional role. You know, obviously those businesses hire you to, you do exactly what I just described, and then they eventually learn to do it themselves. And I think that's exactly what I think small businesses need to do this day, is make a small investment for a short period of time to get that going, get it started, and then have someone either part-time or internally or hybrid person who will take over that know-how and move it forward.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. So early in my career, I was got involved in the knowledge management space through project and portfolio management technology. And one of the things that I would say as I go in and consult for companies around project management is that, mm-hmm. say, you need to adopt and use a methodology for project management. I don't care which methodology you use. There's a lot of things, mm-hmm. that are out there. They work. Maybe you have something that you've developed over time. But I think people need to have that framework, that structure around. And where you experiment with the different tools, part of what you need to do is figure out, okay, where does fit in? What is our process around that? Because then as you start repeating it, you're leveraging these new tools, it becomes a standardized way of doing things. Then you've got a baseline from which to measure and see, mm-hmm. did this make an impact? Did we create more? Are we able to go quicker to turn things around? I mean, a great example, I mean, something that ate up just a lot of time, and I'm not doing this kind of marketing anymore. You know, I would leverage a firm like you as well around this, but is doing in the digital marketing campaigns themselves, mm-hmm. and A/B testing and finding the right messaging and you know, for each of those things, and testing that out and running it, looking at the numbers and pulling it back. I mean, so much of that, while there are tools that are out there to help with different pieces, there's still, I mean, maybe within the large players to some degree, like HubSpot or even Marketo and these other larger expensive systems, mm-hmm. integrates and has a lot of the data, automates a lot of those pieces. But for SMBs especially, there's a lot of pieces, some free, some paid, that are out there. There's a combination of those things. But if you have a framework for how you approach creating the ads, testing them, mm-hmm. out, reporting back, looking at the higher numbers, going with the one that's getting the better results, testing again, improving upon that, and doing that over and over again, it becomes part of that methodology. That's where you'll then start saying, hey, that new tool really helped us do that faster. Or it actually bogged us down. We're not seeing any changes from what we were doing before. So let's try something else against that methodology. But it's, maybe you can't measure if you're not trying things, mm-hmm. and you don't learn if you're not measuring.
I completely agree with you. You know, one thing I have noticed with smaller organizations is that they tend to be a little bit less patient. And I think that's, and maybe less tolerant for a failure, even though a lot of startups came from, you know, experimentation. So mm-hmm. they need to be able to take that in and do the same thing with marketing too. They have to have room for experimentation, room for failure, and give themselves enough time to experiment. You know, the shiny object syndrome is alive and well. We have to be very cautious and remind the CEOs or the leadership teams that we work with to say, hey, you know, like, we have to stick to our guns for at least, you know, whatever, 2 months to put those experiments in, to test them out properly, to get the right conclusions and the right data out of it, to inform you of which channels work, what content works, what messaging works. Don't just drop everything and then say, ooh, there's something else, squirrel, you know, there's a beautiful something
else. Which is another reason why attribution is so hard, because, you know, executives are so fickle on the different things. They don't have the patience to sit and look and wait and see what are the results of this piece.
Yes, that's right. If you're the CEO out there, please be patient with your marketers. But ultimately, I think that's going to be in the benefit, right? And I think that the one message I really want to leave with folks is that it's not a one tactic game. I had CEOs come to me and saying, hey, Martin, so what are these, all these tactics? Which one works? I'm like, no, that's not how it works. It's not like, well, just because you're seeing good open rates and nice response rates from emails doesn't necessarily mean that that email alone is what contributed to your success. Like, it's a combination of all these things. And that's why I agree, going back to your point, attribution is so important to see how each individual tactic has impacted the, you know, the common integrated aspect of the campaign. And that's one thing that I don't think we're there yet either. Like, I think it's even with tools like HubSpot that do a relatively good job integrating some of these disparate parts. There's some data tools that become available to see what that attribution model looks like. You have to be able to build that out first and make some assumptions and measure them against other things. So yeah, patience, experimentation, and I want to say tolerance for failure and picking yourself up again and doing it again. And not giving up, because marketing works. The question is, what's going to work for you, right?
Yeah. No, I think it's a great place to end. it does. It's a I'll say this. You know, having been, as I was saying before we started, my undergrad marketing degree, essentially, you know, an MBA and kind of a marketing project management degree, is like, but I've been in tech. In technical PM and product roles my entire career. Spent a couple of years as a CMO, but with a tech company, with a startup software company. Within this space. And so I see that, you know, often when there are, budget cuts, when you look at concerns, the two areas that are first to be cut are marketing. And then sadly, mm-hmm. like, you know, testing and support, which is like two areas that you should not cut in lean times. Like, that's impacts both your ability to rapidly grow and get back, find a way out of the downturn. Mm-hmm. And then two, it impacts the customer experience with your product, your services, by cutting support people. But those are the two areas.
I completely agree. I feel a little biased, though.
Yeah. Well, biased too. But I realize if you look at the, you know, the CXOs, the leadership, you know, which has the shortest tenure, are first marketing, your chief marketing officer, and second is your CISO, which is, you know, sad too. The people that are helping you grow your business and most secure your business are the first to be cut. So. But
hey, yeah. we won't solve all the problems today, but as we talked about as AI, I think that it's it brings a lot of opportunity. One article, and I'm going to just sum this up, because there's a lot of value that's predicted to be brought from AI, and business and marketing apparently is 10% of all this, like $4.5 trillion, apparently $450 billion every year is supposed to come from marketing. And I suspect half of that is probably small business. So there's a lot of value you can bring to the table, I think. So exciting times for some small biz.
I think we're again, a year from now, it'll be interesting to look and to see, because I think we are going to see more, you know, integration stories of, you know, multiple aspects of, you know, AI tools, solutions that are out there, how people are innovating, bringing them together. I think we're going to see a lot of consolidation, a lot of acquisitions of these small players into somebody that says, hey, we could put pieces together and go after bigger players and automating a lot of the marketing experience. But yeah, it'll be, you know, that, leave that for a prediction show, an episode. And then, but you know, we'll look back at that a year from now. I think we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see how wrong we were, right?
Yeah. Well, really appreciate your time. Really, it was great talking to you. And for folks that want to find out more, maybe final, give you a pitch opportunity for Pinch for people to come and find out more.
Yeah, instead of trying to give you my first and last name, I'll just give you my website. Go to pinch.marketing, probably easiest. Pinch.marketing, go check it out. And if you guys want to connect, fill out a form and we'll chat.
Thanks a lot.
And Christian, thank you so much for the invite. It's a pleasure talking to you. I
great conversation.
Speaking to you. Yeah, fantastic. Thanks a lot. And yeah, appreciate it.
You've been listening to the Collab Talk podcast. New episodes are published weekly, and you can find us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and most other podcast platforms. Thanks for listening.